Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Min Zhou, who is managing partner of China Materiale, who I've known for a number of years now in a few different roles. So Min, very good to have you talking with us today.
Thank you, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Good. So could you kick off, please, by giving us a brief introduction to yourself in previous roles, and please?
Okay. Yeah, sure. I have a bit of an unusual background in this. I grew up in China and graduated from Tsinghua University before coming to the United States with a scholarship. So I total spent 17 years in the U.S. and then moved back to China in 2010. So, as my background, I actually started as a scientist. So I did my PhD in material science at the University of Southern California and was then doing R&D for 6 years at Rockwell Scientific. And then when Unilever started its corporate venturing arm back in 2003, I was fortunate to be one of the very first person they recruited to run the material science platform. So that got me into venturing. So I was with Unilever Tech Venture for 4 years, and then I moved to SVB Capital, so Silicon Valley Bank, SVB Capital, and I actually did 2 years of fund-of-fund investing. So that was a very for responsible for China market. So those 2 years give me a taste of basically looking at overall venture capital space in China, and understanding the funds, the type of companies they invest in, and so on. So when I moved back in 2010, I basically had a corporate venture background and understanding of the China venture capital space, and I thought I wanted to start something different in China, which is to bring a hybrid of corporate venture and institutional venture to China and really looking at early stage investing. So we started in 2010 and with a bit of consulting. So we did actually strategy and open innovation consulting for over 20 multinational companies by now between 2010 and later years. And we started our fund one in 2011 with about $25 million equivalent of RMB. And that was a partnership actually by government and private individual investors in China. So our fund one was started in 2011. The very first year, Shanghai government started its government fund of fund program for venture capital. And so we were very fortunate to be selected as one of the first 12 funds.
Then excellent.
So yeah, we had a few lucky breaks, I think, in our company history. So yeah, in 2016, we started our fund two, which is about $60 million equivalent of RMB. We have, in the fund two, we significantly upgraded our LP base. So we still have government backing, which accounts for about 30% of the fund. And then we have, 10% private companies in China, and then the remaining 60% are actually five multinational companies. So we have GE, Samsung, BASF, BAT, and SABIC all investing in our fund too. So there are some common themes among the five corporates. So first of all, they are all interested in the materials, manufacturing, digital space, digital industrial space. And secondly, they are all first time investing in China in the space. So, we feel ourselves very fortunate and to have the backing of these multinational companies. And we have been very happy working with our LPs. So,
excellent.
For our fund too. Yeah.
So just to recap there, I think we've known each other back from the Unilever days and Unilever Tech Ventures and Silicon Valley Bank, and that we've been doing stuff. So great introduction on that to you and your fund. Could we explore a little bit between what you see as contrasting between the China sort of technology and ecosystem and the what you've seen in the US, because your particular experience in that there?
Yeah, it's interesting. So for a long time, China entrepreneur or VC ecosystem was described as the wide, wide west. I think that was doing it, looking at China back in the US. We often describe China as the wide, wide west at that time. And I would still say that it's still probably a bit true now, because I think there are a whole lot more players in the ecosystem. It's much less organized. It's much less institutional and a lot more dynamic and more chaotic in a way. If I look at the ecosystem in the sense that there are a whole lot more entrepreneurs and there are a whole lot more investors. So unlike institutionalized VC firms in the Silicon Valley or in the US, we have investors going from individuals to big corporates. They might do it ad hoc. They might have organized VC. And the VC firms themselves change much more rapidly. So you have new firms established, people leaving their old firms, getting new funds set up and on a daily basis. So it's a very more dynamic and more chaotic compared to the Western ecosystem. And secondly, I think the government plays much more of a role in this ecosystem compared to probably the West. So a lot of the hot topic or a lot of the hot investment sectors are somewhat tied to government policy. So for example, when the government started a few years ago back in 2013 or 14 timeframe to really encourage semiconductor, all of a sudden we had 100 times more investment in semiconductor versus before. So I think those are the probably two more of a difference that I see. So even after spending 8 years in China, I feel like it's still a very dynamic and chaotic place for me in terms of looking at the opportunities.
Yeah, and you've touched on the fact that you've got corporate LPs who are investing, and that's via yourself. Certainly from my experience of being involved in China now for over 10 years and working with corporates and that entering into China, you know, investing via a fund I see as a sensible approach to get your feet in the ground, to build up relationships, to understand the sort of deal flows that are sort of occurring in that there. And it is difficult to invest directly, as you talked about, you know, RMB Chinese funds of needing the money in the country. Could you elaborate a bit more on how China Materiale works and the LPs you've got in there, why they're investing and how they're investing?
Yeah, sure. So, I think, we must be a very unique fund in the world in the sense to have both government LP and multinational companies in one single fund. And it was, it was a long and challenging process to bring all parties together. Our LPA ended up 150 page long with dual languages and a lot of provisions, I think, from all around the world, as well as what the government wanted to see. So it was challenging, but it was a fun process to go through. And now we have a very good operating limited partner. So we value the contribution by each of our LPs. So it's important to have government backing in the sense that, as I said before, government plays an important role in the ecosystem. And a lot of entrepreneurs look for funds with government backing as a credibility mark. So it's good to have the government support. And also they help our portfolio companies in terms of local issues. And for the multinational companies, it's really, we appreciate the interaction with them. Each of our LPs are a little bit different, but they are all the first time in China investing, directly investing in China through our fund. So we are all doing this in the as a first experience. So the corporates bring to our fund a lot of industry insights, what they see globally, but more importantly, also the local access and the local markets and engagement. And that's very important to our startups. So almost all our companies who are in our current portfolio interact with our corporate LPs. And it's one of the reasons they want our money. So that's a lot of value add by our corporation.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the experience of corporates, I would say I've been working there over 10 years and seen, you know, corporates went through a phase because they were able to invest from offshore dollar Cayman Island funds, and then the regulation and the rules changed and that within China to be more onshore funds. Are you finding it's possible now for corporates to do direct investments, or are you finding that this you know, investing via a fund is a sensible, certainly first start, but maybe an ongoing model? Or is it possible for corporates to invest directly? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think as a thought, it probably makes a whole lot of sense to invest in a fund because you need time to understand the market, to look at the deal flow, and also to basically get together to have a bigger presence. Because by having the government and multiple corporates, our fund is a $60 million fund, and it's still not a huge fund in China. But if you do it alone and you only have $10 million to play with, then you are much less visible in the marketplace. So I think from both the size and the presence and from the practical perspective, it probably makes a whole lot of sense to start in a fund. Also, as I said before, the market is very dynamic and it's very chaotic. So you sort of need a local partner who really has a team to screen and understand the changing picture of the startup field. Usually the corporate venture has a small team at its headquarters, but it's really to deal with the dynamic situation in China. Unless you can have a huge team here, it's very difficult to do it by yourself. So I think it makes sense to invest in a fund to at least for the first initial start. And also So for the corporates also, you need to be a bit more open as to what you see and how you engage with the startup here in China. I think it's a win-win situation if you do it well between the corporate and the startup.
Yeah, and I very much agree there that having feet on the ground and working with a trusted partner who can understand and bridge that sort of east to west sort of perspective, I think is really important. As you built on there, I'd like to take the conversation now on to what I term innovative new value chains. You know, a few weeks back, you were with me in an event I was doing in Shanghai where we were talking about how do corporates now connect new technologies and different startups in new business models. And I see China, because of its technologies and scale and new ways of doing online and mobile commerce and stuff like that, is being an important part of that. Where do you see China playing in these new value chains, innovative new value chains globally? What sorts of things are you seeing in terms of materials or technology or business models that you see where corporates should be learning from China?
Yeah, certainly. It's interesting. The week after I met you in Shanghai, we had this big Innovation China conference sponsored by GE, and the topic was digital industrial. And we had speakers from a dozen multinational companies and startups and so on. So one of the core themes that came out of that conference is that if you look at manufacturing, which China has a huge base of, the digitization digital industrial not only changes the manufacturing, but it really impacts how the business model for B2B, traditional B2B business will work. So it has a far-reaching implication in terms of the new value chain. So what you mentioned just now. So for example, like how you look at assets before, it was selling equipment usually, but 95% of the equipment actually is not utilized full time. So there's a trend to purchase services rather than purchasing assets. And then you look at GE talks about predictive maintenance, where you are being able to predict when the equipment needs to be maintained and giving the service provider revenue as well as saving the customer cost. And then there are big multinational companies talking about the B2B business model to a B2P business model, where you B2B is learning from B2C in terms of how the products are sold, the customer service, etc. Because right now with a digital tool, your product actually can create an opening for you to connect with your customers directly, rather than usually shipping the products to distributor and then distributor to another distributor and to your customer. So
I think that's that's an important aspect, that we're seeing the scale of China and the manufacturing, but then also we're seeing the digitization that's coming through Alibaba and Baidu and Tencent, and all that data and artificial intelligence is giving China the opportunity to build some of those capabilities, which that we're going to change business models, as you're saying, and then how does that get deployed globally is where the large corporates need to be considering and looking at. So it's good.
Excited about the digital industrial space, because that marries the IT, digitization, and manufacturing. And both of these parts, China is a very strong at. So we are really seeing opportunity to build a new business model or reshape traditional industries through these experiments.
And in terms of sort of moving the conversation onto the people sort of aspect and that of it, people are so central to venture capital and innovation. And how do you think things are changing? People's views of China are changing, and about people, because the stereotype has been around Chinese lacking innovation and rote learning or copying. And what's your view now about Chinese leading tech and leading business models and being able to work in this collaborative way? Are you finding examples where those things are now being seen as good examples?
Yeah, certainly. So I think in terms of people, we are seeing a whole lot more entrepreneurs. These entrepreneurs are getting younger and more bolder and also having more global mindset. So recent example of these bike sharing already coming out of China, spreading globally within a very short time period of starting up in China, I think is a good example of how these companies had a global market in mind when they started, even in China. And that's a very good phenomenon to see. And in terms of innovation, we are really seeing accelerating innovation. I think the people who say China was good at copycat, I think they have to understand actually in China, although you can copy a product, it's actually very difficult to just copy a business model, because China is so structurally different, especially if you are into the B2C business. The consumer behavior, consumer taste, the culture, the way of doing business is very different. And so even if you look at maybe the product is similar, but how they are structured and how the product features, how they are sold, how they interact with consumers are very different. So those are all innovation to my eye as well. And personally, I think the level of service is also very different. In China, it's very difficult to just sell product. You need a whole lot more customization. You need a very short response time. It's less standardization. You need to respond a lot quicker to the market. The market is a lot more brutal than the U.S., I think, because it's less structured. So there are more opportunities, but these opportunities are also fleeting much more quickly, and you have a whole lot more competition. So the Chinese companies are very agile. So, and then also the policy drive is very different. So from all those aspects, I feel like China actually was never able to just copy a U.S. company and be successful in China. But certainly, as we go forward, we see more and more truly local innovation. So all the companies we invest in actually have U.S. global or global patents. They are globally leading in terms of their technology and in or their product and the business model.
Yeah, I think your point there that the Chinese market is different to the Western market, but the view that I've got of it now, that what's happening in China with the speed and the customization and this sort of connection to the customer, while that might not be the way the Western market is at the moment, it certainly will become, I think, when I compare it to my 15-year-old daughter, what she expects for online and service and customization and immediate sort of response is what the next generation is coming in the West, because they've built up this sort of view of mobile and service and that as well. So while it might not be the perception in the West at the moment, I think these things are going to have to become more prevalent in the West, and China's leading on some of those things, I see. So,
yeah.
So in terms of, you just touched on some examples of your, you know, some of the companies you've invested in. Can you illustrate one or two where they are doing things either in technology or in business models and why they're thinking globally? Can you give us a couple of examples?
Yeah, sure. So we have invested in a number of startups that are very interesting. I give you an example from both our Fund 1 and our Fund 2 companies. But we are short of time. As you get me going into talking about my company for a long time. So let me do it quickly. So first, for example, our Fund 1, we invested in a company in IoT, industrial IoT, and it started with RFID chip that can track industrial assets. But what's interesting is that the first vertical the company goes into, which is in the very traditional industrial gas market, where you have these millions of gas cylinders going circulating around the world, is that the big data or being able to individualize the tracking each cylinder really has huge implication how the industry is going to change. So by tagging each cylinder and be able to print a QR code on each cylinder, the industrial gas company can now connect directly to consumer, and B, they can analyze, they have a whole lot of more data to analyze it down to each cylinder. And a third, I think in 5 to 10 years' time, you're going to see very different model how industrial gas is going to be sold. So that's an example of
good example,
Yeah, really changes the traditional industry. And in our second fund, we have invested in a 3D printing company, which prints 10 times faster than any other traditional 3D printing methods. But the company is having this model where they put the equipment on customer site or connected to cloud, and they really charge a fee per print. And that's the globally patented technology, and since we invest in, all our corporates are actually engaged with the company. So we have them doing business with GE, with BASF, with SABIC, and so it's a very good example of how what we invest in ends up of interest to the corporate. And we're now investing in a big data company in industrial. And it's about looking at the data from manufacturing and really improve the product yield and improve the efficiency. So even 1% improvement in traditional industrial manufacturing yields a huge basically output.
Excellent. So two great examples there to bring to life some of the things we were talking about earlier about the fund and the corporate engagement. So that's really great insights, Min. Thanks very much. And so what do you do to relax when you're not driving the China tech and investment ecosystem? What do you do to, as interests?
Yeah, I run around Century Park. I like to walk in nature, and there are more and more blue sky days in Shanghai. So that's I really enjoy a lot. And then I enjoy reading. So taking a glass of wine and read a good book is what I do.
Excellent. Thanks very much for your insights. We really appreciate it. And I look forward to catching up with you again in China or maybe California.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me, Andrew.